Greetings to all of God's people. This is Mordecai Joseph. We're today in lesson 320. And we're going to continue here with Numbers chapter 2, where Moses is recording the knowledge about the tribes of Israel, about their numbers, sort of a census, and gives their numbers in terms of the people who are from 20 to 60, each of the tribe and their leaders. And so we read again in verse 28, we continue from this point, speaking about, verse 29. And the tribe of Naphtali, the prince of the children of Naphtali, being Ahira, the son of Enan. And mind you, all these leaders were well known in the congregation, and since their names were recorded, they certainly were known for generations to come and to this very day for those who study this. And then the reality is, when you look at it from God's point of view again, not from man's, we being human beings, by nature we think like human beings, but when you think about it from God's point of view, these people have lived a long time ago, yes, 3,500 years ago, but not in the sight of God. They are as good as alive. They are going to be brought back, just a matter of a few days in God's timetable, and they will be alive and people will know them. And all the people that have experienced this this time in the wilderness, obviously, they're going to be back again, alive and well. And so when you look at it from that point of view, it's totally different than just ancient history, something that happened a long time ago, old stuff, who cares? And that's not the way it is, because obviously God decided to spend the time and the effort and the space in the Word of God, as we call it, the Torah, the Bible, and he recorded all these matters, and every single year they read it. And when he came in the flesh, went to the synagogue, every single year he went through this. And you can imagine from his point of view, since he had known all these people in person, he knew who they are, who knew what their thoughts were, what their feelings and emotions, you see. And so to him it was totally different than obviously it is for us. We have no clue about these people. We don't know them. Nothing personal here. But to him it was. And if you begin to look at life and the world and the creation and his word and all that we read here and study from the divine outlook, you see, from God's point of view, through his eyes, through his mind, to look at all these things, we will gain a totally different perspective and obviously we'll have a greater appreciation for it. So, which, you know, this is a good opportunity when we come to areas that, you know, they're not as exciting, so to speak, as we think about excitement and look at it from God's point of view. It's not boring to him. It is exciting to him. These are people that he's going to fellowship with. They're going to be his sons and they're going to be forever. And again, we read in verse 29, now about Naphtali, the Swedish people. And one of these days, you know, the Swedish people are going to have their minds open. Of course, some of them already know that because they've preserved that history. And when you study Scandinavian history, in terms of the ancient history, they preserved quite a bit of information about their Israelite ancestry. They know it. For those who dig very deep, they find it. And when their eyes are open, they would recognize this is Naphtalite history, this is Swedish history, ancient history, and these are their peoples. And they are going to meet them when the day comes. So life's going to be different. And when you live in eternity and you see all these people and you talk to them and you say, hey, I read your name in this book or that book, you see, things would be totally different at that point. So we should help ourselves to gain more interest and greater appreciation and other facets of understanding when we begin to look at it from God's point of view and not our own. And so, this is the Naphtalite, a prince of the children of Naphtali, being Ahira, the son of Enan, and his hosts, and those that were numbered of them, 53,400, again, another big tribe, and certainly bigger than either Ephraim or Manasseh. That ought to tell us something. A lot of tribes were bigger than these two, even though they were abundantly blessed. Verse 31, all that were numbered of the camp of Dan, now talking about another one, the tribe of Dan, being 100,000 and 50 and 7,000 and 600. They shall set forth hindermost or hindmost by the standard. So this last quarter of the tribes of Israel, the three tribes headed by Dan, who was in the center, was again about 150,000, and that's an awful lot. That's about 50% more than the camp of Ephraim, Manasseh, and Benjamin. Again, that tells you something about the blessings that God gave to all the children of Israel. And then we read in verse 32, "These are they that were numbered of the children of Israel." And also, a side point here, the tribe of Dan and all the other tribes on both sides, the other two, Naphtali, and the other tribe, they were in the rear of the camp of Israel. Now, in the beginning, you read that when they left Egypt, the people that were affected by the Amalekites that came to the hindmost part of the camp were the ones that lost some casualties, you know, to the Amalekites. And whether this group of Israelites were at that point in that position or not, we don't know. We know they are at this point. So whatever problems they had later on, either with other Amalekites or other tribes, you know, for 40 years, or other peoples, God placed a Danite there in the center, and Danites were known as judges, as warriors, fierce people, and they had fierce armies. For centuries they were known to be as fierce warriors, and so you can see why God would place Dan in that position. And also the Swedish were known to be as very good soldiers, and you know, it gives you a little clue there, but why God put them there, you know, including the tribe of Asher, the third one with them. And we read again here in verse 32, "These are they that were numbered, all the children of Israel, by their fathers' houses. All that were numbered, all the camps, according to their hosts, were 600,000 and 3,550. And that's only soldiers, that is men of war, 20. Not that they were soldiers in the sense of soldiers, but they were men who were able to go to war, 20 to 60. And that certainly does not include all the men, women, and children that is under 20 or above 20. And for women, at all ages. And so there certainly were a great number of them. We don't know exactly how many, but you know, if you figure out when you have this kind of number of soldiers or men of war, you certainly have at least about 5-6 times as many, especially when you talk about prolific, very prolific people, which they were when they were in Egypt. You know, if under slavery they were extremely prolific, well, certainly in freedom they may be just as prolific, if not more. Verse 33, "But the Levites were not numbered among the children of Israel." So you add their number too, and you have even more. "As the Lord commanded Moses, this did the children of Israel, according to all the to all that the Lord commanded Moses, so they pitched by their standards, and so they set forward, each one according to its families and according to its father's houses." And certain laws were later on, were recorded concerning this matter, where God basically made it very plain He does not want the tribes to mix among themselves. He did not want them to switch properties from one tribe to another. He wanted all of them to remain in their own lands and to pass it on from generation to generation. And some of the children of the daughters of Manasseh, from the tribe of Manasseh, the daughters of Zelophehad, which we read about it later on, presented that predicament before Moses, and he went to God, and basically he told them, you know, they can marry anybody they want, but it has to be from their own not only tribe, but their own household, you know, the family, you know, the extended family that they have, and not go far away. Because if you do that, obviously you're going to create chaos and confusion in Israel, and people from the north, you know, will come and marry one of your daughters or whatever, you know, or your son marries daughters from others, and then you have inheritance problems, and then switching territories or lands or properties, and God was not interested in any of that. He wanted to preserve the family You see, in the character of the family. And God is not in the, in essence, in the melting pot business. He is, when you think about it, from this point of view, in the segregation business. Segregation, not because of wrong attitudes, you know, toward other people. After all, we're talking about the same people here. But He wanted them to remain within their own. You see, each to his own. As He created all things, each according to its own kind. No crossbreeding in that sense. And you see it in many other things, many other laws also, including laws of clothing and you know, mixing things and, you know, mixing animals together where you put them to work, you know, the horse and the ox. He said, don't do it. So, you know, it's a part of the nature of God. That's the way He created us. That's the way we're going to be. And so He even separated the races that He created, you know, the different peoples that came from the sons of Noah. That too, He did a long time ago. And so, you know, that gives you an idea about the mind of God, the nature of God. And so it's going to be for eternity in that way. And so this is chapter 2, and now we go to chapter 3, verse 1. Now these are the generations of Aaron and Moses. Generations means toledot. And you find this terminology, eletoledot, several times. In the beginning, in Genesis chapter 2, you read that the first time, eletoledot. These are the generations of the heaven and the earth. In other words, Toledah comes from the word to birth, to give birth. And that also means the beginning. And so when a new dynasty or a history of be it the heaven and the earth or peoples or whatever it may be is going to be recounted, this terminology would always appear there. And you see it also with Jesus Christ. The generations of Jesus Christ, also with the same terminology. Verse 1, chapter 3. Now, these are the generations of Aaron and Moses in the day that the Lord spoke with Moses in Mount Sinai. So here we are still in the book of Numbers, and we're still in Mount Sinai. They haven't taken off yet from that place. So we're talking about a year or so. After they came to Sinai, they were still there because it took the tabernacle quite a bit, about 9 months, I believe, to be built, put together. So all this time, they were still in that area. And in that Sinai, in that territory, God created this whole pattern of order of the tribes of Israel, of their standards, of their signs, of their posts, of their flags, of the configuration in which they should be. So Israel was, in essence, was created as a nation. You see, and organized, and given the law, and education, and you can imagine that this was, in essence, a very intensive period in the history of Israel, and all that was around Sinai, and that's before they began to take off and wander in the wilderness. So Sinai was their beginning, just like the intensive training and organization and putting together and growth and all that that happened later on in Jerusalem. When Jesus Christ came, and then when He died, was resurrected, and His disciples were there, and that was the beginning of that part of the history of Israel. And that was a church, that's a history of Israel, that was a church of Israel. You see, they were all Jews. That was the second phase of it, the spiritual phase of Israel, and so they became known as the Israel of God. And to them, God grafted also some Gentiles, and also they, too, became a part of the commonwealth of Israel, and therefore became the household of God and the Israel of God. It's not that it is, you know, different people, a different entity. It's the same people, you see, with some grafted among them, just like the ancient Israelites had grafted foreigners among them. One story, and a lot of people don't realize that, and they've been led to, you know, to believe, and to this very day they believe it, that this was one phase and God did away with it. That's old stuff. Now we've got new stuff, new God, new doctrine, new book, new religion, new this and new that. And that was a phony to the core. And that's why God called that whole endeavor, you know, that came out of it, the great whore and the harlots. You see? Thus, we're not a part of His plan. They're not His people. It's not His church. Their teachings are not His teachings. Their terminology is not His. You see? And they worship the God of this world, thinking that they worship the God of heaven. And that's very important for us to understand that. So we read in verse 2, and these are the names of the sons of Aaron, Nadab, the firstborn and Abihu. Unfortunately, these two died because of rebellion. Eleazar and Itamar. These are the names of the sons of Aaron, the priests that were anointed, whom he consecrated to minister in the priest's office. So he had four sons, but he's left with two. That means half of his family was decimated. And that means that instead of the tribe of Levi being twice as big as it could have been, you know, it was half as big as it could have been. And that's quite a horrible penalty that came on them and on their possible future generations. And we read in verse 4, and Nadab and Abihu, or Nadab and Abihu in English, we know which Abihu doesn't make sense, it's Abihu. Abihu means his father, or also means God is his father. And Nadab and Abihu died before the Lord when they offered strange fire, that means fire that was not sanctified by God himself, because he's the first one that started the first fire that burned the coals and the wood that they put there. And so they offered strange fire. And the people of God, unfortunately, they haven't learned that lesson, because oftentimes they bring strange doctrines, strange teachings, you know, from Babylon, from their background, and they mix it with the truth, and they don't realize how God looks at it. And we have to be very careful, because he gave us already an example how he feels about it. And this is what they did. They offered strange fire before the Lord in the wilderness of Sinai, and they had no children. Now here it is. People that had the possibility of maybe they were married, we don't know. There's nothing about that. But they could have had children and children's children, and one half of the tribe of Levi, you know, would have been also there, and yet they're not there. They'll never be there until they're resurrected, you see. Then the tribe of Levi will multiply again. But look at all these years that they have lost. You're talking about 3,500 years, and if they're going to come in the second resurrection, you're talking about another 1,000 years, talking about 4,500 years of possibility of having children and children's children, you see. That tells you something about the penalty that we bring on ourselves at times and on our unborn children or possible children, you know, that we can have potential. The penalty is very great, so oftentimes we have to recognize that and consider our actions and thoughts and ideas and attitudes and behavior and conduct and all those kind of things, and realize that when we do something wrong, there's an awful lot of damage there that we may not even think about. Verse 5. And actually, let's read again. Verse 4. And Nadab and Abihu died before the Lord when they offered strange fire before the Lord in the wilderness of Sinai. And they had no children. And Eleazar and Itamar ministered. And Tamar means palm, you know, like the palm tree. And Eliezer means God is my servant, my help, that is. And so these two basically created the tribe of the priesthood, Eliezer and Itamar. Well, there could have been four families, there were only two. And Eliezer and Itamar ministered in the priest's office in the presence of Aaron, their father. And as it is, as you read in Jeremiah 33, where God told Jeremiah, in essence, to tell Levi, that just like he's going to multiply the number of the people of Israel, like the stars of heaven, he's going to do it also for David and also for the house of Levi. You see? For the priesthood and also for the Levites. And so, verse 5, we read, and the Lord spoke unto Moses, saying, bring the tribe of Levi near, and set them before Aaron the priest. So this is about a year, roughly, after they arrived at Sinai, and the law was given. And so now he is consecrating them. He said, bring them before Aaron the priest, that they may minister unto him, and they shall keep his charge, and the charge of the whole congregation before the tent of meeting. So whatever was necessary for the entirety of the nation. Now, the tribe of Levi is consecrated for that, to be another department of education, the department of justice, department of arts and music, and all these necessities that any nation has, you see. And all that was going to be governed, obviously, by God, by the law of God, and it's not, you know, that they are doing their own thing. And they became an extremely valuable group of people to Israel. That is, as long as they followed God and His way. And so, this is the way God made it. And that's the way God did it again when He came in the flesh. He called 12 disciples. He prayed all night for them. You see, because their role is extremely important of these 12 disciples. And of course, in their case, we're not talking about a whole tribe, just 12 disciples. And it's not including their wives and sons and daughters and their descendants. You see, it's only the 12, which were going to be the pillars, you see, of the new Israel. Levi, in essence, became the pillar of Israel, the ancient Israel, to give them the law, to be the bridge between them and God. And the conduit, you know, for information, knowledge, and understanding that comes from God. And when they are faithful, obviously, it would not be perverted knowledge or mixed up, you know, with truth and error, but purity of it. And so the disciples likewise conveyed, you see, just like the Levites were to convey the very teachings that God gives them. And at times when they need some information, God would speak to them directly through the high priest. You see, and other times He just used them as prophets. Many of the prophets of Israel came from the Levitical priesthood. And oftentimes they were priests. And so the disciples received information directly from the mouth of God, not in the flesh, known as Jesus Christ, and they conveyed it to the rest of Israel. You see, not only their generation, but in writings to all generations to come. And in the future, the 12 of them are going to sit on 12 thrones judging the tribes of Israel, you see, and through them, all nations of the earth are going to come and seek knowledge and understanding in Jerusalem, and 12 representatives, that is, you know, 12 segments of Israel are going to be represented in Jerusalem, and obviously the 12 apostles will be in charge. So, in essence, you know, they're going to be in a position to teach not only Israel, but the entirety of mankind as they come to Jerusalem to inquire of God and of His law and of His information. So, you see the far-reaching consequences of decisions that God made a long time ago about certain people. And when we consider all that, you begin to realize and the plan of God begins to unfold in a much, much, much greater way than just the facade of it. And so every time we study all these things, you know, we should look at it from God's point of view and project it into the future, into eternity. And then it's not as boring as people may think it is. And so He said, this is what they are going to do. He said, bring the tribe of, verse 5, and the Lord spoke unto Moses, saying, bring the tribe of Levi near, and set them before Aaron the priest, that they may minister unto him, and they shall keep his charge, and the charge of the whole congregation. So their job was to take care of the temple, that was one part, but also to take care of Israel, because Israel also is the temple of God, and God was going to dwell in them, you see. And then the Israel of God, again, was called the temple of God. And so they needed to make sure that both the physical temple and the people of Israel, who are going to become, you know, later on the spiritual temple, when they receive the Holy Spirit, are going to be sanctified and filled with truth, knowledge, and understanding, no perversion, no uncleanness. So see the double purposes of the head. And verse 8, we read, and they shall keep all the furniture of the tent of meeting and the charge of the children of Israel. Again, repeating both aspects of the commission. And to do the service of the tabernacle. And you shall give the Levites unto Aaron and to his sons. They are wholly given unto him from the children of Israel. And all that for the service of God and the service of Israel. And the two always have to be taken into account there. Verse 9, and you shall give the Levites unto Aaron and to his sons, they are wholly given unto him from the children of Israel, and you shall appoint Aaron and his sons, that they may keep the priesthood, and the common man, speaking about an Israelite, that draws nigh, shall be put to death. So that's the second warning that he gave them. First, when he stationed the Levites around the tabernacle, He made it very plain. Israelites are not allowed in. You see? And again, he makes it very plain here. And that's basically what was in Israel as long as they obeyed God. And so when things began to degenerate and disintegrate, well, everything began to disintegrate in that way. And now instead of having, among other things, and you can say many things here, among other things, instead of having the educators, you see, from Levi, who received the knowledge and understanding directly from God, now the educators of Israel became, unfortunately, Israelites and not Levites, and therefore they invented their own information, which was a mixture of truth and error. And so now I had the false prophets, you see, and he had all kind of educators. And to this very day, you know, we take it for granted. You know, you want to be a teacher, you go to school, you know, you become a teacher, and then you go and teach people. And so we have education today that is a mixture of truth and error. And it's not the education of God. And the end result is that the temple of God, the Israel of God, the people of God, you know, the spiritual and the physical, are fed with truth and error. And that creates, obviously, a great problem for all of us. And when the time comes, God is again going to restore all things as it was in the beginning. And nobody is going to say, well, I want to be a teacher, I want to be a minister, I want to be this or I want to be that, you see. Unless we have been called by God, and Levi has been called by God, we do not call ourselves into a ministry, you see. We do not call ourselves into the teaching position when it comes to the kingdom of God. God is the one that does it. And that's what he says. And who is he that dares approach me? And that's what he's telling Israel. If you dare approach me, you see, you will be put to death unless I called you. So that has, you know, an awful lot of ramifications here. But we're today in other circumstances. Everything is mixed up. Everything is in confusion. And so we're reaping the consequences. And the day will come when God is going to straighten this whole mess that, you know, we got ourselves into. And verse 10, let's continue here. You shall appoint again Aaron and his sons, that they may keep their priesthood, and the common man that draws near shall be put to death. So you can spend a lot of time studying this aspect and all the different ramifications of that and consequences and the way we have life today, and then gain a perspective and understanding of it from the point of view of God, and know how to return to God. This is one of the ways we're going to have to return to God. We're going to forsake our ways, our educational system, you see, and the ones that are in it, everything that we do. These are all our ways, not God's ways. And we're so far from it, you know, that, you know, the Word of God, the truth of God, and the law of God seems to be very far fetched from us, you know, strange and different, you know, people are not interested in that, they have contempt for it. And that's in essence what happened to Israel. They got to the point where the law of God was contemptible in their own sight, and it is to this very day, including among the overwhelming majority, unfortunately, of the Jews. And that's the reason, again, for the Great Tribulation and the Day of the Lord. To turn things right side up after purging, you know, all the filth and stench and pollution that is in the entirety of Israel and the whole earth. And that's how God is going to take over again all the kingdoms of the earth, and the kingdoms of the earth will become His, and everybody is going to do things His way. And so here in the law we read an awful lot of information about the future in graphic details and how things are going to be. And those who do not study the law of God are not going to be teachers and priests and kings in that kingdom. You see, because God is not interested in people doing their own thing in His kingdom. We do it His way, we forsake our way. That's what He said, let the wicked forsake his way. You see, and we come and do things His way. And unfortunately, God is going to have to crush, you know, humanity into submission, to come to this point where they would say, not my will, but your will be done. So, we have an opportunity to begin to do that before it is done to us. And so we're in verse 11. And the Lord spoke unto Moses, saying, and I, behold, I have taken the Levites. Who did it? God. Who calls people to the ministry? God. Man doesn't do it. Man does not appoint himself, neither as a prophet, a teacher. You see, and again we see the rebellion in our midst today as it was in the days of old. Men and women call themselves into the service of God when God didn't call them. Appoint themselves into those positions when God didn't appoint them. You see, they do their own thing. And they say, I'm just as good as you are. And ancient Israel had a lot of not just false prophets in terms of men, but also women. And God condemned both the prophetesses of Israel that were misleading His people. Well, they're at it to this very day. Nothing new under the sun. And God makes it very plain. I, behold, I have taken the Levites from among the children of Israel instead of every firstborn that opens the womb among the children of Israel. You see? And that's the reason why Jesus Christ was the one that ordained the disciples. He says, I have chosen you, you haven't chosen me. You see, I've chosen you. And then he told his disciples to do likewise, to ordain men everywhere and ordain elders everywhere. You see, and the ordination was not because the apostle liked this one or that one or the other person. It had to be by guidance and direction and inspiration of God Himself. You see? And so they were looking for certain qualities and then bringing them before God, you see, to anoint them and to lay hands over them, you see, so that God would approve them. Well, God doesn't approve them. They were not ordained. And yet, some people, you know, find later on rose from themselves, as Paul said, you know, after my departure, you know, there would be those who would rise from among yourselves, grievous wolves, people that God didn't call, God didn't ordain, that, you know, self-appointment and things like that. And they did their own thing. Well, they tore the congregation to pieces because of that. And unfortunately, an awful lot of people are doing it to this very day. You know, the wolves are everywhere. And so, you know, this is, when we fear God, you know, when we realize it's a fearful thing to fall into the hand of the Eternal, because we're going to have to stand before Him and give an account. And He's going to ask those people, did I call you? Who are you? What are you doing here, feeding my people? I didn't call you to do that. That's what James said, you know, do not be many masters. Because we're going to get, you know, the greatest condemnation. Why? Because either they're the greatest good or the greatest harm to the people of God, depending on whether God called us or not. And whether we hid the calling in a proper way. And so God makes it very plain. I'm the one that called them, and I've taken the Levites from among the children of Israel instead of every firstborn that opens the womb among the children of Israel. And the Levites shall be mine. You see, the people that God calls into the ministry are His. And we do not go tell God, you know, we are yours, if He didn't call us to be His. You see, that's in essence what the false church has done. They said they are His. You see, we're His church, His people. And He says, no, you are not. You see, that's why a lot of people that will come to Him and will say, we've done all those things in your name. He says, no, you are not mine. Get out of here. I don't know you. And how many of us who are self-appointed, you know, we're deceiving ourselves, you know, the Lord put it in my heart to be a minister or things like that, are going to find ourselves thrown out when the time comes. And God said, you know, these are mine, now, because I've chosen them. And for all the firstborn are mine. On the day that I smote all the firstborn in the land of Egypt, I hallowed or sanctified unto me all the firstborn in Israel. Both men and beast, mine they shall be. Why? Because I am the Eternal. You see, that's a very sobering statement to recognize and to realize. I do not appoint myself as a teacher or a minister or an apostle or a prophet, you know, on my own because, you know, I feel like it, you know, I like to do it, you know. Or some people, you know, use that cliche, well, I like to serve, you see. If God didn't say I'm your, you know, you're mine, I have no business being there, you see. And that's basically the way God wants us to learn and to do things. If He hasn't called us, we shouldn't be there. And if He has called us, you know, to a certain function, that's a function we should do, not something else. And yet people do not realize that. And that's why Paul, you know, was talking about the body. You know, if God called us to be a mouthpiece, you know, let us be a mouthpiece. If He called us to be a foot or a leg or an ear or whatever it may be, you know, we should fulfill whatever position God gives us. And there are people in their arrogance that think that they can do everything And that's unfortunately the manner of in some organizations. I think, you know, the minister is a know-it-all and he's everybody and he can do everything. And God doesn't call people to do everything. You see? He calls people with different talents and abilities and he places them to be in certain positions to do certain things. As the Apostle Paul said, God didn't call me to baptize people. You see, he called me to be a teacher. You see? And that's the role that he fulfilled. You know, others have baptized. And that's the way he does for all of us. He gives all of us talents and abilities, and every single one of us becomes an instrument in his hand to do his will and not our own. You see? And when we remember that, we do not place ourselves where God didn't place us. Nor do we take somebody else's responsibility from him because we want it to ourselves. And why do we do all that? As God says, because I am the Eternal. And that should be very plain and very simple. It's a profound lesson for us to comprehend and understand. And in everything that we do in life, we should remember this. Then in verse 14 we continue. And the Eternal spoke unto Moses in the wilderness of Sinai, saying, number the children of Levi by their father's houses, by their families. So only God has that permission. You know, when he gives us that permission, that is, has this prerogative, that is, to do it, and men cannot do it. And when he said, do not number the Levites, Moses could not number the Levites. But when God says, number the Levites, Moses numbers the Levites. You see? And when David, inspired by the devil, you see, and God was really behind it, to number Israel, when God says, don't ever do that, you see, unless I tell you to, unless God is calling for a census, man has no right to do it. And yet, you know, who cares about it nowadays? People do it all around the world. Nobody cares about the law of God. You see, and that's how far we are from him. And yet, you know, the people that do it, like any other nation, you know, they call themselves, you know, a Christian nation. What's Christian about it when we are despising the law of God? Verse 15, he says, number the children of Israel, that is of Levi, by their father's houses, by their families, every male from a month old. Now with them from a month old. But even then, you know, they're up to a month, don't even number them. So, whatever instructions God gives us, we do. As simple as that. So from a month old and upward, you shall number them. And Moses numbered them according to the word of the Lord, of the Eternal, as he was commanded. You see, life is very simple when we walk with God. That's the simplicity in Christ. He told us to do it, we do it. He told us not to do it, we don't do it. Whatever he tells us, we do. You see? That's simplicity. You don't need, you know, complex philosophy and going to specialized high learning, you know, educational schools and things like that. You know, and learn all the complexities of life that people have invented from their own mind. All the concoctions, you know, all the theological terms that people come up with and so forth. That's not the simplicity in Christ. That's a wisdom that does not come from God, but from another source. And yet all of us, to one degree or the other, if we're not careful, we can fall for it, and many fall for it. And this is what they do, as the Lord commanded Moses. Very simple. And these were the sons of Levi by their names, Gershon and Kohat and Merari. So there were three major families in the family of Levi. And these are the names of the son of Gershon, by their families, Livni and Shim, and well, actually there was there. Okay, there were three families, major families, and in the configuration of the tabernacle, the three of them were situated right next to the tabernacle, and on the fourth side, the sons of Aaron, the family of Aaron. So in essence, there were three families, major families of Levi, and one family of Aaron, and that made four. And so they were situated in that position that God told them. Around the tabernacle, the sons of Aaron, where Judah was, on the east, and the Merarites, or the Merarim, that was that family, were in the north, right next to Dan, that's obviously in front of the tent, and the Gershonites were on the west side, with Ephraim behind them, and the Kohathites were on the south side with Reuben behind them. And so, these are the families that he's talking about. And those families received, you know, special instructions and functions, and they could not exchange those functions. And nobody could take it from the others, you see. And that was to be done forever. In other words, as long as human beings on the face of the earth. Their functions would remain in these families, and they could not take it from each other. That's what the rebellion of Korah was all about. They were vying for something that God didn't give them, and they were accusing Moses and Aaron for taking it to themselves. And they didn't realize the simple statement. I did it. I said it. I am the Eternal. You do it that way. And when Korah rebelled, he was not rebelling, as Moses told him, against Moses and Aaron. He was rebelling against God. And so oftentimes we have to consider that today. When God gives us very plain instructions, are we following it, or are we rebelling against God directly? It's not what man says. Man is neither here nor there. You see, it's what God said. And so these are the families here, and they all have their own functions. Verse 18, and these are the names of the sons of Gershon by their families, Libni and Shimshi, and the sons of Kohat by their families, Amram and Itar, and Amram was the father of Moses, and Hebron and Uziel, and the sons of Merari by their families, Mahli and Mushi. So these are the families of the Levites according to their fathers' houses, and the names, these names of these families were known in Israel for a long, long time, for generations to come. So you always knew where they came from, who their fathers are, from what houses they came, and this way you knew where to place them, you see, in the temple, in the tabernacle, what the positions are, and those things were recorded, you see, and they were very important. And then when you come to the book of Chronicles again, all those things are there. And when they went into captivity and came back, people had to look into the Word of God, into the book of Moses, into the Chronicles, and find out, about those people and who they are, where they came from, what their name is, so they would know where to place them in their positions. You see, this way there is no confusion. And when they're all resurrected, all of them again are going to assume the same position, and those three families with the family of Aaron are going to continue to function in the same way for the whole period of the millennium. You see, and then after that, in the second resurrection period, until all become spirit beings. So you're talking about positions here that were given until everything is done and finished. You see, until the story is no longer a story of physical human beings, but spirit beings, now the family of God. How God is going to do it at that point, well, that's up to Him. We'll find out in the future. Just like they say, to be continued. And so we have these families here, and then verse 21 of Gershon was the family of the Libnites, so the family of Shimshite. These are the families of the Gershonites. Those were numbered of them according to the number of all the males from a month old and upward. Even those that were numbered of them were 7,500. And the families of the Gershonites were to pitch behind the tabernacle westward, as were before that, and this is their position. And in the 40 years in the wilderness, this is what they were supposed to be. How it was in Jerusalem, probably they also lived in the same configuration around the tabernacle, around the temple, in the city. And in the future, you're going to find them also probably in the same position. Verse 24, the prince of the fathers house of the Gershonites being Eliasaph, the son of Lael, and the charge of the sons of Gershon in the tent of meeting of the tabernacle, that is, meeting of the tabernacle, and the tent, the covering thereof. In other words, it was supposed to take the covering of the tent, put it back, and the screen for the door of the tent of meeting, that is, the veil, that is, in the entrance to the tent, not the Holy of Holies, and the hangings of the court, and the screen of the door of the court, which is by the tabernacle and by the altar round about, and the cords of it, even whatsoever pertains to the service thereof. So God gave instructions in detail. That's what you do, this family, you see, and it was recorded right here. So nobody, down the road comes and says, well, I want to do this, or you want to do that. Well, he says, no, you can't do it. The law of God was very plain from Sinai. This is what we do, and you go do what you were supposed to do, and let's not, disobey God. And so, these instructions were very important, and that showed you the order that was in Israel and the harmony that was in Israel as long as they obeyed the law of God, and nobody took anybody else's position, you see. And as long as they all obeyed God, everything functioned in harmony, and they did it, properly. They took it off, and so everything was done as it was meant to be done. And also, in order, You don't, you know, just go and do whatever you want, you know, and take things out of the tabernacle before, you know, the major items were taken care of. And so that taught Israel, a nation that lived in slavery, where they did not know a lot of these things, obviously, that's not the kind of life they had as slaves, to be a nation of harmony, of order, of knowledge, of understanding, of wisdom. And they, you know, as they did those things, a good understanding of all that do His commandments, they gain more wisdom, knowledge, and understanding, a greater comprehension of the nature of God, of His character, of His personality, you see. It taught them an awful lot about God. And so in return, you know, in turn that is, they turned around and taught Israel the nature of that God. And there is so much information here that when you dig into it and you begin to comprehend and understand the source of it, which is God, you begin to learn so much about Him. And when people have contempt for the law of God, especially when they come to areas where they think it's boring, well, there are many aspects of God that you will never know, you will never learn unless you read it here. You see, many of these things are not, most of these things are not repeated in the so-called New Testament, so you're not going to learn an awful lot of things about God, about Christ, unless you come to this place here, where He described Himself through the things that He gave them to do. Anyway, we'll stop at this point. Again, this is Mordecai Joseph. Greetings to all of God's people. Until next time.